Welcome to Peter Day's World of Business. And this week, Peter Day asks whether the credit crunch crisis creates, at least in theory, a big opportunity for women.
Hello and welcome to Global Business. And there's no getting away from it. This is going to be a very sexist programme. For one thing, I'm the only male voice in it. But the questions it raises seem worth asking while the dust of the credit crunch is still in the air. We know what happened in that runaway boom, fuelled with borrowing and other people's money, and now we have to deal with the consequences of the bust, consequences that may be with us for years. But why do we have these regular explosions of animal activity that cause so much damage when the business world comes back down to earth with a crash? In Iceland, where they've been particularly badly hit, some women say the credit crunch is a man-made problem.
Overwhelmingly, it's been men at the key decision-making tables. And I will firmly say that if there had been more women, the troubles would not be as big. You have the token women here and there in the financial sector and in the business community. But when you have a woman who's a token, she doesn't have much of a choice but to behave as the rest of the group does.
Accept that proposition and you may agree with the follow-up. Should we look to women to deal with the things the men failed to do?
I think it's certainly a real opportunity to stop and think about how we do business. And change often comes in terms of thinking about, well, if the men haven't worked, perhaps we should look at women and perhaps we should look at people with different characteristics.
So, pushing this idea a little bit further, is it possible to see this crisis we're still in the middle of as a chance to smash the glass ceiling that seems to have kept women from the top jobs for so long?
There's a lot of evidence from France, from Iceland, even the US, which shows that when there are more women in top management in financial firms, there is a different track record in terms of how much risk is taken and how they've survived the last 2 years.
These are contentious ideas we'll explore with an international cast of female contributors in this programme. And let's start by hearing more from Professor Susan Vinicum at Cranfield School of Management in the south of England. She's Professor of Organisational Behaviour and Diversity Management, and she also runs the International Centre for Women Leaders. She closely monitors the number of women getting onto company boards as directors.
When things don't work, decision makers think about how are they going to change things, and change often comes in terms of thinking about, well, if the men haven't worked, perhaps we should look at women and perhaps we should look at people with different characteristics. We have colleagues at Exeter University who've looked at that when the share prices have gone down significantly in FTSE 100 companies and when there has been a vacancy on the board, that there has been a trend to actually appoint a woman as opposed to a man on the board.
So you see the credit crunch crisis and recession as an opportunity for women, do you?
I do see it as an opportunity for women, and that doesn't mean to say that I'm full of optimism that we're going to suddenly see lots of women coming to the top, but I do think it's an opportunity. I think it's a real crossroads for companies to stop and rethink how they're working, and actually if they did look round at the composition of their teams, they would recognise that they are not representing the diversity of their consumer base.
But they've got so much else on their plate at the moment. Are you suggesting they should turn to women because the men have messed it up?
I'm not saying just because the men have messed it up, but clearly their current formula isn't working, and I think they've got to fundamentally think through a number of aspects of their business, one of them being actually the composition of the board and how they make strategic decisions.
Professor Susan Vinicum at Cranfield University School of Management. Now to a country where women have made big advances in business life over the past few decades, Spain. Ana Maria Llopis in Madrid has run her own business and also been a non-executive director on international corporate boards such as Reckitt Benckiser and BAT, British American Tobacco. What does she make of the idea that gender can play a significant part in resolving the world's financial crisis?
I think women are jugglers of life, and I think the jugglers learn to take decisions and have the right conditions that are required now under the crisis. I think that women are more prepared because we have to deal with lots of cost constraint, savings. We take risks, but intelligent risks. And we are accustomed to taking fast decisions in moments of crisis. much more than men because of the way our culture has educated us.
In, say, a family crisis?
In a family crisis, you have to take decisions very fast with a lot of information but also a lot of intuition.
Yeah, they cope with all this stuff at a family level, at a domestic level, some levels in companies, but on the whole they don't get to the top. So they're unproved when they have to take the great big decisions about what a company does or how it gets out of its huge debts or whatever it is. Simply, we don't know, do we?
No, we don't know. We don't have a guarantee. But I think that potentially we could be with a higher statistical possibilities that the problems would be addressed differently and probably have a better result.
Ana María Llopis in Spain. Now to the troubled country of Iceland, where the new investment firm Oda Capital says it's taking a radically different approach to financial services by incorporating feminine values into the world of finance. And those are Oda's words, not mine. Oda was founded 2 years ago, before Iceland's financial plight became clear to the whole of the rest of the world. Oda is a woman's name that means in Icelandic wealth, happiness and clear space. The two founders are Halla Thomasdottir and, speaking first, Kristin Pettersdottir.
Women tend to bring a lot of things to the table. They are what we call risk-aware. They are not risk-averse, but they are aware of risk, whereas men tend to be risk-takers. Women tend to think more long-term. They tend to think about the team, the group, not only themselves, which is also very important. They think more about the people. And women see other business opportunities than men. And that is also a very important thing. When you think about it, women are becoming quite a significant financial force. 80% of the household purchasing decisions are made by women today. Human capital of women is growing very fast. Financial capital of women is growing very fast. And it's very important to have women around the decision-making table in any company to really understand this growing female market.
Right at the top of a board, right. You don't need people who understand the marketplace on a board, do you?
You do need people that put ethics and corporate governance high on the agenda. And I have found, being in human resources for a long time, that women tend to put these issues higher on the agenda. Not saying that men don't, but they're interested in good corporate governance. They're interested in ethics. They generally have a wider definition of returns than men.
Are you saying that a company with a decent proportion of women on the board would see things like toxic loans or all those mysterious things, the way loans were packaged up and all this jargon-ridden stuff that nobody understood, would have seen through that?
I'm saying that women around the board, and I have a lot of experience with this, they will look at more things than just the financial profits. They will ask the questions. They will have more stakeholders in their head when they think about, is the business doing well? It's about the financial profit. It's also about the social profit. It's about the well-being of the employees. It's not the narrow definition of shareholder alone. And I also find that women are willing to ask stupid questions. I'm sorry, but I think we're living in a world where that wasn't allowed anymore. They want to understand. That's what risk awareness means. It means that you won't take risks you don't understand. So you will ask, what is this subprime? What do you mean? Who's actually paying this? Are they going to be able to serve these loans?
The founders of Oda Capital in Reykjavik, and before forming the new company, one of them worked in one of the main Icelandic banks. One was managing director of the Icelandic Chamber of Commerce. In other words, they were deep in the system that later failed so badly. This is Global Business from the BBC. I'm Peter Day, this week wondering whether women might not have a better idea about how to get out of this recessionary mess than the men who may, just may, have started it. Now, of course, there's nothing magic about women in business, but that doesn't mean that the yawning deficit of female directors on big company boards does not need attention. As we've discussed in previous Global Businesses, pressure groups and politicians have for some time been discussing the idea of quotas for minorities on boards. It's happened in Norway, it's starting to happen in Spain. Back to Britain and Professor Susan Vinicum at Cranfield Management School.
I think what happens on all male boards is there's much more of a complacency about just agreeing with the chairman or the managing director. So I think that one has a much more thorough discussion on boards where there are women. We also know is it depends on the numbers of women. It's no good board sitting and listening to this kind of conversation and saying, well, I'll just kind of put on a woman on my board. That tokenism, we know, doesn't work. One needs really to have several women on a board so that they're not just there just because they're women. They're there because they're talented individual directors who've really got meaningful contributions. But I still come back to the point, it is very important how the chairman actually manages the boards. And those chairmen who manage in inclusive ways, who encourage open and vigorous discussion, are the ones that are managing much more effective boards right now.
You're not saying that women on the boards are a panacea, and you're not saying that if we'd had 50-50, 40-60 or whatever the percentage is of women on boards, we wouldn't have had the credit crunch. But you are saying that there might have been a lot more awareness of what a bubble was building in the financial markets before it actually burst, and that people would have talked about it more openly.
I am. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Professor Susan Vinnicum. Well, now the emergency measures are apparently over, we're still in a mess which banks and businesses and governments have to get out of. Can we look to Iceland and the women of Oda Capital, with their avowedly feminine approach to business, for some idea of how the future ought to be conducted? After all, they're on record as saying that the global financial crisis is a blessing in disguise. Kristin Pettersdottir, the Oda chief executive, and Halla Thomasdottir, the chairman, both answered my question. Do you feel you've gained authority by what's happened, this disaster? You, as a woman in business, have gained authority because men messed it up?
In a way, yes, because I think we are more listened to. I feel that we have a stronger voice, and people really are seeing that. Makes a lot of sense, a lot of the things we are saying.
There were men that said to Kristin and myself when we started our company that we had lost it. We were nuts. Why would women like us that were welcome in the world of men choose to be in the world of women? Because that's what they thought we wanted to do, because we wanted to use our own values. They thought it was going to be all about women. That's never what it's been about, but it's been about using our own values. But here we are after the crash in Iceland, and I think we're perhaps one of two companies that's still alive and doing well and not accepting any government assistance and won't need it. So yes, I think there's some authority to be gained from that. We managed to do very well with the values that we've brought. But I'm really, really worried, though, that it's going to be a glass cliff situation for women. That's when a woman is put into an impossible position.
A trap.
It's a cliff that's going to break off so easily, and then she's never going to be able to rise again. Whereas look at all the men that clearly went belly down during this crash. I think most of them will probably rise back to glory before too long, and some of them are still in complete denial that there's anything that they need to review about their ways of doing business and are just scrambling to get back into the game on the same values, on the same means that they did before. No self-evaluation going on.
Are businesses learning anything from the credit crunch, and are they willing to learn? Lingering great big questions from Iceland. For a long time, I've been intrigued by the way that many of the women I encounter in business seem abler and more fluent down the corporate pecking order than many of the men right at the top of it, to generalise rather wildly. Halla Thomasdottir agrees.
That's a huge waste, and women have been told throughout the years that the problem is within themselves, that they need to somehow change, to ask for more pay, to ask for more promotions, to change the way they are. And I think that's the wrong way, because that way we just continue to create a culture that is the same. We adopt the male ways of doing things, and the culture doesn't change at all. We should talk to men and women about how we can create a better balanced, healthier organizational cultures, that we create better bottom lines, and I mean bigger definition of a bottom line then, a bottom line that benefits shareholders, employees, communities, and the world, if we take it a little bit further, and then maybe we can build a capitalistic system that isn't gonna flunk the way that this one did.
Oda makes a very big play of its feminine values, but is it really different there?
Yes, it is, and I would say that this is a human financial service provider. We are much, much more human. We are valuing different things than typical financial service institutions.
For example, when we're choosing an investment, we will not just do a financial due diligence, which a typical investor would do. We will do an emotional due diligence. Because if you think about the company you're investing in, you can present anything in Excel, and it can look very profitable, and the cash flow looks good and everything. But it's really down to the people, their culture, the values that the company has, if it's a good investment or not to us.
Hey, you're becoming a caricature of a woman organization then. You're getting all touchy-feely, and I'm beginning to get a bit suspicious.
Yeah, but this is exactly how one would feel, which makes it gives us all the freedom to invest in the world. It's good that other people think this way, because what is a good investor? Is it just money, providing just money, and then a lot of aggression around how to release some value from it? A really good investor brings a lot more than just money. It brings not just financial capital, but also emotional capital. Because you know what? You can squeeze the blood out of a turnip to try to get the best turnips, but it's much better if you can make something flourish. And I guess the way that we attend to things, we are willing to use both our rational mind and our emotional intelligence in order to release value out of our investments. And that's a much smarter way to go about it, but it is more long-term. The touchy-feely thing, the soft side of the business, is actually the hard side of the business. I think we've seen that from the crash.
So do you look people in the eye in a different way?
Oh, I believe we do. And we reject a lot more investment opportunities based on emotional due diligence than on the financial due diligence.
Hannah Thomas-Dottir and Kristin Pettis-Dottir at Oda Capital in Reykjavik. Now to an American who's an acknowledged expert on the gender gap in many parts of the business world. Sylvia Ann Hewlett is the founder director of the Center for Work-Life Policy based in New York. And as an economist, she produced some sobering figures for me.
If you take the entire well-qualified global talent pool that has at least a BA degree, only 17% now comprises white men. 83% is either a woman or a multicultural person. So clearly, a company or an organization that only taps into 17% of the developed talent of this world for, say, its leadership, is tying its hands behind its back and will not be a winner going forward, because we do need, in a world where high-octane talent drives the numbers, is the source for the next upswing in the global economy, we have to make sure that the best players are able to tap into the full range of talent, and that has to involve women.
Now, we have to get one thing out of the way before we go any further, and that is, of course, the very obvious case that women, probably most women, want to take some time off this career ladder that seems so relentless, to have children, look after children, be distracted from single-minded business opportunities by families.
Well, you know, this is where, you know, being an economist and having a whole bunch of data really helps. I did a big study on this phenomenon. It was called Off Ramps and On Ramps. So, you know, it was a big book last year. What I found, if you really look at the data, is that sure, you know, 37% of women, highly qualified women, will take a break. Usually around the second child, it's the second child that push you off track. But they're only out these days for 2.2 years. And then 93% of them are flooding back. So if you have a career interruption, I don't think that should be enough of a reason to kind of knock you off track. Now, right this second, there's a lot of stigma attached to any hole or gap in your resume. And one thing I'm working is figuring out how to recapture this top talent and give women at age, you know, 36 or 39, a second shot at ambition.
There is another element of what women in business said to me about this, and that was, we don't want it. We change our minds. We don't want to go back into great big corporations and have to fight our way in that traditional way. We don't want an off-ramp experience and then come back in. We actually want to get on with our own work. We want to start a smaller, separate company with much more female involvement. We don't want to get involved with this stuff. We don't need quotas because we're going to turn our back on them.
That's not true.
That's what they said.
You can see from the data that if they did have a second shot at a fabulous mainstream career with all the security and the power and the accoutrements that come with that, that they would go for it any day of the week. The problem is that at age 38, there are very limited opportunities in the kind of mainstream. So many of them do go off on their own and form the most fabulous, you know, entrepreneurial ventures. The problem is that those are generally very badly paid.
Sylvia Ann Hewlett, director of the Center for Work-Life Policy in New York. But it's easy to get carried away with all this. This is the buzzy annual awards ceremony for the campaigning British organization Opportunity Now, set up 18 years ago to increase the potential of women in business. On the Opportunity Now advisory board is Caroline McCall, chief executive of the Guardian Media Group. And in the middle of the throng, I pop my question. We had this grand occasion here. Now, the proposition I'm kind of following up here, with people who are here and people abroad, men messed it up, women can get us out of this mess. Now, is that a ridiculous proposition or a reasonable proposition or one or what or what?
Well, I wish that were true. I mean, I'm not sure that's true. I think it's far more complex than that, I'm afraid. And I think it's going to take us a long time to get out of it. And I think balance boards will help.
But you're on a bit of a balance board and you're a woman chief executive. Do you see women having a steadying, a more intelligent, a more antennae-out sort of influence on the way a company runs, balancing differences that men can't balance, for example, not so boxed in? Maybe we got into the mess because there were so many compartments and men can manage the compartmentalised world?
I don't actually think that. I mean, I do think women bring a different dynamic to boards. I think they change the tone and the language and the feel, and I think they perhaps approach things differently. I think it's difficult to generalise, but I think balanced boards, where you have one, two, three women on the board, makes for a different kind of conversation around a board table to an all-male board. I don't think it's about, would women do better than men at getting, you know, it's just, that's too simplistic, I'm afraid.
It's an amazing evening here, and the buzz is fantastic, as it always is on these sort of occasions. Do you not think that may damage the cause? It makes women go away feeling that it's all been done, it's been achieved, when still this is about edging forward, that it's too much a celebration of things that actually don't go the whole distance, that don't get women onto boards, that don't get companies 40, 50% women, that it's about such small achievements that they overall target is lost in all this? It makes you complacent?
No, I think that tonight is a fantastic evening because it celebrates success.
It's a pathetically long haul, though, this. People have been promising that the glass ceiling would be broken all the time I've been making programmes about it, 20 years now, and it doesn't happen, does it?
Well, I think it does happen in certain sectors, in certain boards. It's got to happen more, and it's got to happen quicker. But it's not right to say it's not happening. There has been progress.
Caroline McCall at the Opportunity Now Awards ceremony. Back to Madrid now, and another question for the experienced international businesswoman, Ana Maria Llopis. To get back to the question I started this with, men got us into this mess, women might be able to get us out of it. That could be the most awful trap. Because if women are appointed to top jobs, and there are signs in some places that's happening to get us out of the mess, and they fail in these very difficult circumstances, the cause of women in business and organisations will be written off for another generation, won't it?
I think that's very dangerous. I agree with you. I don't think that the issue is, should we have women getting out of the mess? We should have women and men that act differently getting out of the mess. And we need to have a common grounds of women and men that think alike in the sense of what is needed for the future on a crisis, irrespective of the gender.
Another question for Sylvia Ann Hewlett of the Centre for Work-Life Policy in New York. If we were to get 40% or 50% of women, not just on the board, but in top positions and represented throughout companies, would it have a measurable economic impact on those places where it happened?
It would. There's a lot of evidence that when women are better represented in top teams and when multicultural people are better represented in top teams, the decision-making is better and the growth rates are more robust. So I think, you know, the evidence is there that this is a huge step in the right direction.
But can women really afford to spare the time from real life to devote to business? A last question for Halla Thomasdottir at Oda Capital in Reykjavik.
And your own work-life balance through launching this company with these special aims through the crash, how's that gone?
I think it's gone quite well. I mean, we don't work any 18 hours. I would say typically we work maybe 9, 10. And we really believe in work-life balance, and we also believe in certain flexibility. People here have flexibility, and that's very important, because I think if you really want to get the best out of your employees for long term, you have to give them this work-life balance. Otherwise, you just take everything out of them in a few years and they burn out.
But you give them a bonus.
But there's not every... Yeah, but...
No, you know what I mean? I mean, that's the bargain, isn't it?
Yeah, people do this
because suck you dry. We suck you dry and we give you a bonus for overworking.
Exactly, but I don't believe in that system. That's not a sustainable one. And I think, you know, it's not for the employees and not for the clients, not for the society.
There seems to be something about banking, finance, business that doesn't quite work. Organisations of all kinds, not just businesses, could be better run, more satisfying to be part of, more responsive to the needs of society and the world we live in. Things could be better, but how?
Peter Day. The producer was Richard Berringer.